Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe.
President, happy birthday to you.
And by Mr. President, I mean Ray Harris, the president of my heart. Happy birthday, buddy. Tomorrow your time.
Yeah. Normally, as usual, you're premature, but no, thank you very much. I normally get a burger on my birthday, and we can't do it tomorrow, so Heather gave me a burger, but it was practically tofu with no bread and no mayonnaise, so what's the point of getting older if you're miserable? But I had my traditional hamburger as such for my birthday. Thank you very much.
Yeah, now, a hamburger is a sexual term that I'm not familiar with. No. Can you explain to me what a hamburger is in this case? Is it
unfortunate? I mean, I would love to tell you.
Something
it was her
brown and crumbly.
It was her on one side and a brunette on the other, me in the middle. But unfortunately, it literally is a hamburger that I'm speaking of. And she's just decided that that's got to go because she loves me and she wants me to live forever. But again, what's the point? If it's going to suck. So there we are.
Send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead, and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, Mother.
I still love that.
Welcome back to Tiberius, episode 4. Now, before we get into it, a couple of things. People have asked the dialogue from that. Where's it from?
Right.
It's an actual historical recording of Tiberius.
Sure.
And Livia. I'm surprised that people doubt.
Yeah.
That.
We read books, motherfuckers. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Tortoise.
We read books.
We read books and we have authentic recordings. That's why.
And we apologize. And we apologize for the reading of the books.
Did you say reading or eating? Because maybe I've been doing this wrong.
That is from the BBC series. They're probably going to fucking sue me now, but fuck. From the 60s, I think. It's called The Caesars, 1968. It was produced by Granada TV, actually, not by the BBC. The Caesars. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube. I only heard about it like a month ago. I only discovered it a month ago. Wow. When I was looking for something to use for this intro, and it's fucking brilliant. I got to tell you, folks, it's 6 hours long. It's a six-parter. It's all up on YouTube, and it's great, just fantastic. Just Google like The Caesars 1968 or something in YouTube. You'll find it in the Googles. Look it up in the Googles. I watched Logan Lucky the other day. You seen Logan Lucky?
No, no.
Oh, fucking get it, man. It's great. It's like a heist film. What's his name?
Oh, the guy James Bond and
directed by Soderbergh.
Mm-hmm.
Great director. But it's just all these rednecks, rednecks who do a heist. And there's one guy I love, he's like, I looked it up on the Googles. I said to Chris Yates, I'm going to use that from now on. That's great. Anyway, The Caesars, 1968, right. Really well acted, put together. You know, it's just fucking great. So that's that. The other thing I wanted to point out to people is, there is a section when I was editing the intro, you know, just listen to it again, and I'll point this out.
Send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead, and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
That little pause there,
right?
The little beat that I took, it's yeah. like just to shake you up a bit. It's to be disconcerting. It's to maybe we go, oh, what? Oh, fuck me. Oh, you know, it's like you know, premature pause. Orgasm right. sort of thing. Yeah. When I first sent Ray the opening theme and said, put it in the show, motherfucker edited that out. And I was like, hey, what happened to my little blip dramatic there? And he goes, pause. Oh, I thought that was a mistake.
And then I should
have. You're a fucking mistake.
I should have realized. You don't make mistakes because that's what you tell me.
That's right.
I apologized.
Except for my first two. Except for my first two marriages.
Right.
Anyway, fucking let's get on with it.
Yeah.
Tiberius 4.
Yeah.
So, boys and girls, those of you that have been with us for some time, at least at the end of the Augusta series, may remember. A chap by the name of Arminius.
Ah, yeah.
AKA
yeah,
yeah. Herman the German. the leader of the Cherusci tribe of Germans. The Papa Brewski tribe.
Right.
What do we remember Herman the German for, Ray?
He was clever. He was a clever German. He actually planned out...
What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
What?
I felt it.
What?
I felt it. I don't know what it was, but I'm 52 now, so I can do whatever
do it
the
again?
Fuck I want. He was clever. He was clever. He was a clever German, our boy. I don't know what that was.
I don't know what that is.
Hey, anyway. I don't know what it is, and I'm the one saying it. Anyway,
okay.
he planned out a brilliant... and yet brutal ambush for Varus and his three legions. He took them out. He drags them out deep into the German territory. It's late this season. They got to go back, and he sets up this beautifully executed ambush and a whole. Is it at least two and a half or three? I can't remember now. Legions are destroyed. Their standards are taken. There are some survivors that get the fuck out of there. But it's the beginning of a I guess a rebellion by him, by the Cherusci in Germany. And this is just another thing that another tremendous shameful act for the Roman army that they have to somehow, some way, try to avenge and get over and get past.
Yeah, it's known as the Varian disaster after Quintilius Varus, the Roman commander, or the Clades Variana, or the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest, is how most people these days know of it. When did it happen, Ray?
Oh, God, I can't... Was
Remind
that...
Remind people?
I was that 12? I can't remember. I can't remember the year.
Nine, something.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because it was right after the other two revolts in Pannonia and nearby that. So they clear up Pannonia, and then suddenly this happens, and it drives Augustus and crazy, and Tiberius has got to handle it. And now Tiberius is the top dog, and he can't go out, as we're going to see, so he's going to have to send other people to handle his business.
And what year are we up to now?
We are in 14. It's, I guess, late in the year, the fall or something like that. And as we said last time, the rebellion in Pannonia has been handled by Drusus. Germanicus is handling north of Italy. And he was able to calm down the 1st and 20th legions. However, the 5th and 21st legions, who are in their winter quarters at Vetera, are still not quite happy. They're not wanting to give up their demands. They're not impressed that everybody else is... given up. These guys are still a little antsy, and so Germanius has got to figure out some way to take the steam out of these two legions, and he think he has a cunning plan.
Did you just call him Germanius?
Germanicus. I've been writing Germy the whole time, so because it's too many fucking
germs.
Letters. Germs.
Yeah,
there
just
we
germs.
Go. So he's got a plan on how to take the steam out of these guys.
Okay, but the point I wanted to make is the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest was 5 years ago. In
right.
our timeline.
Right.
It's now 14.
Right.
So a bunch of Roman, like a couple of legions, got their asses handed to them.
Right.
Wiped out 5 years ago by Herman the German, right. And he's still running around. The Germans haven't, the fucking Romans haven't done anything about it yet.
Yeah.
5 years, this stain, this insult has been on the Roman armies. So, Germanicus is going to try and do something about that, recover their pride.
Mm-hmm.
But around about 14, Arminius is starting to have some issues with his father-in-law, Segestes. He was called that because he was always suggesting things. Yeah, every night he was like, hey, what about Chinese for dinner? Or Indian?
Hey, what
pizza,
about
pizza. What about burgers?
Yeah.
Thai, Italian, Japanese. I know. Let's have leftovers. And everyone was like, fuck, you're annoying. And they called him Segestes.
Oh, God.
Again, listeners to the Augustus series may recall that before the Battle of Teutoburg Forest, Segestes had tried to betray Arminius to Varus,
right.
The Roman commander. He was like, hey, listen, you got to keep your eye on Arminius, motherfucker. Like, he's going to betray you. And Varus is like, what? Herman? Fuck off. I've known Herman his entire life.
Yeah,
we've known Herman forever, man. Like, Herman's a good guy. He and his brother were like, what do you call it? When you take somebody hostages? Back to your place. They were hostages. And they love us. Nobody loves us more than people who are child hostages. That's the point of taking child hostages.
It always works.
Because when they grow up, they it's Stockholm syndrome. Segestes was, where's Stockholm? Don't worry about it. Not far from here. But he's like, Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
You kidnap them when they're kids. Right. They grow up around you, or they're given to you by their fathers, right. Kings,
thanks,
usually
Dad.
Aristocracy.
Right.
You raise them and they're like, you know what? You Romans are okay with your child sex slaves and your other things. They want to grow up and have child sex slaves of their own one day.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
What do they call the child sex slaves? The deliciae, the delicates, the deliciae. Yeah.
and the other part is to just for these people to grow up and to see how just badass Rome is, and that it is pointless to resist them. But Arminius, he takes a different track, and fuck me if he doesn't pull off the greatest ambush in history.
I meant to mention that when Varus ignored Segestes' warnings about Arminius, Segestes said this.
Big mistake. Big. Huge. I have to go shopping now.
And it was.
Yes.
Huge. But the reason Varus ignored him is because after Segestes tried to warn him about Arminius, he was like, well, maybe we should replace Arminius with Bob or Bill or about John, Barry, Stan.
Anybody.
And Varus was like, somebody just get him the fuck out of here, will you? So that's a warning to you all out there. Don't be long talkers.
Right.
No one likes a long talker.
No. Short and swift. That also applies to sex if you're not sure what you're doing.
Well, apparently some of the issues between Segestes and Arminius have to do with the fact that Thusnelda...
It's hot.
Arminius's wife...
Right.
Yeah, hey, Thusnelda. Thirsty baby. She was Segestes' daughter.
Right.
She had been betrothed to somebody else...
Sure. Sure.
Before Arminius walked in, went, hey, how you doing? Hit her over the head, picked her up, and carried her off to his tent, Virginia style.
Right. And in No, it should have to be his cousin. And in the other hand, he had a boombox playing Bad Leroy Brown. No, this guy just walked in. Didn't matter that she was committed to someone else. Didn't matter that it was going to piss off Segestes, her father. He just picked her up, took her out, married her, got her ass pregnant. Not her ass, but you get the idea.
Well, they weren't sure about how it worked back in those days.
So they tried everything.
Just hit all the holes. Hoping one of them works.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's, again, Virginia style. It's like... So it's likely that Arminius had taken advantage of the Roman preoccupation with the mutiny to make some attempt to Oust. I'll go with oust.
Yeah, wise move.
Suggesties.
Right.
And consolidate his own position, but things had gone badly and Suggesties had got the upper hand. Yeah. He even managed to whisk Thusnelda away from Arminius.
Right.
And now Germanicus sees a chance to destroy Arminius, destroy the entire German resistance with a single blow. Chop off the head.
Right.
As your wife said to you on your wedding night.
No. So, Arminius is theoretically at a low point. Suggesties has got the power. He's got his daughter back. She's whisked off to Ravenna. And so, so I guess Germanicus, is it for ego? Is it for honor? Is it for glory? Does he want to be like another Caesar? I don't know. But his job is to take care of the area to the north of Italy. And by gum, there's a wonderful opportunity here. Maybe he can even get Suggesties as an ally. So again, let me time this just right. I've got to do some things to get going first. But the point is, this could be 5 years in the making. Maybe this is our great moment. And like you said, I could wipe out Rome's probably biggest problem and someone who took our honor in one fell swoop. He's got to be excited about this.
5 years in the making, yeah. Like Ray trying to get into Heather's pants.
But it worked. You focus on the end goal, not the 5 years I had to make do.
For those of you who aren't listening to our Renaissance series, A, shame on you. B, we discovered recently on the Renaissance show that it took Ray 5 years to sleep with Heather. She wouldn't sleep with him until they were married, and it took him 5 years from the beginning of dating to this wedding night.
Yeah.
Before he actually got to tap that ass.
Right.
And, at the beginning, what people don't realize, at the beginning of the process, Ray was actually 6'2". And 5 years of jerking off five times a day.
I just pulled it out of myself.
He shrunk.
He shrunk. God, bones and marrow and everything else was going out. By the time if she hadn't said yes to marrying me, then I'd probably be like 4'8" now. So
you'd be like Tyrion Lannister by now. You pretty much are. But oh my God, that's so funny.
But it took Boccaccio 5 years, so I'm in good company. Mm.
Yeah, but then he ended up raping Maria.
See, D'Aquino. I should have taken a page from anyway.
Again, you should be listening to our Renaissance series. If you're not aware of the fact that one of the fathers of the Renaissance basically raped his way to posterity, into posterity, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Germanicus, his reasons for doing it. Well, Let's remind people that Tiberius isn't quite sure about Germanicus at this stage. He's got the stink eye on Germanicus for a number of reasons. And Germanicus is his nephew,
right?
Yep. Son of Drusus.
Right.
His nephew, but he's. Germanicus is very popular, like his father was.
Yep.
Reminding people again who may have forgotten or not listened to our old series yet, Tiberius, not the life of the party. No one likes Tiberius. Not even Augustus. No one likes Tiberius. He's grumpy. He's sullen. He's stern. He's kind of he walks into a party. And it's like, when the bad guy walks into the saloon in a Western, everyone just stops
music
playing.
Stops,
the music stops. Everyone's like, fuck it. Tiberius is here. Let's just go
there
home.
There goes the
Let's
party. Yeah.
Germanicus, on the other hand, like his father, boom, the party starts when he gets in there. He's fucking uptown funk. Gonna give it to you. When he gets there, like the party's on. This is that ice cold Michelle Pfeiffer for that white gold. This is for those hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. It's Fox's favorite song at the moment.
My God.
He dances to it every night.
I bet he does.
You got to see it, man. It's fucking incredible. The dances that he does are wild. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, so, and then Germanicus, on top of that, being wildly popular, which Tiberius finds a little bit disconcerting, Germanicus is married to Agrippina. And Agrippina is the daughter of Agrippa, most loved Agrippa, and Julia the Elder, the daughter of Augustus and the ex-wife slut whore of dead slut whore now of Tiberius. So she obviously doesn't fucking like him.
Right.
And she's got the blood of Augustus in her and the blood of Agrippa.
Damn.
And Germanicus is popular, and she obviously hates Tiberius. We can assume, seeing as he starved her mother to death. he's already going, I'm not fucking too sure about this Germanicus kid, you know, nephew or not.
Right. I just wanted to ask, just because to me, that entire situation, as you explained it, says more about Tiberius than it does Germanicus. If Germanicus can't help but be smooth, he's learned tricks, he knows how to get people to like him, and it's probably genuine, it's probably sincere, but he knows, as any good Roman, as any good commander would know, that if you get the troops on your side, they will fight 10 times as hard. How many examples in the Caesar show did Caesar and his men get out of impossible situations? I mean, it was ad nauseum. But the point is, I think Tiberius is just so... I don't know if he's just massively insecure or he's just a depressant or whatever, but he is, I think to me, there's a certain part of it that's he's seeing things that are not there. Just because you have a young, good-looking, charismatic commander, that doesn't have to be a good thing. If you're a good leader, you'll use him as a tool, like Augustus was using Agrippa. I just think it says more about Tiberius and how he sees possible threats everywhere. And hopefully Germanicus can read into that. But the point is, I just think that Tiberius is just coming from a place inside himself, judging Germanicus that has nothing to do with the young kid. It's all about how he perceives possible threats.
Probably doesn't help that, you know, in Augustus's will, he said, look, I'm really sorry I'm having to leave Tiberius in control. Yeah. I wish this one person
was not in the stable of young men who are coming behind me. This was not the one I wanted, but he's the only one left standing, no pun intended, so you get him.
Anyway, let's get into this campaign. So Germanicus sees Arminius as weak, and he's going to try and, you know, kick that fucking nut out of the nut block. Right. I don't know what that means. I just made that up. So he's got this big campaign. He's going to get support from Segestes. Segestes is, how about we start here? We could attack there. We could go up here. We could do this. Like, just shut the fuck up. Let me do the strategizing. You just back my play, motherfucker. So his plan is to divide and conquer.
Right.
Classic Alex. He's been reading his Alexander,
listening
obviously.
To our podcast.
Yeah. The jumped in his TARDIS, went forward, listened to this, went back. Doctor, I don't know, you're deep, deep, deep into Doctor Who at the moment. Right. You were telling me off air. Yeah. Rubbing one out to David Tennant, you
more,
said.
More than one, but I'm not bragging.
Yeah. He's going to divide up the three main troublesome tribes, the Bructeri, the Cherusci. Why do all these German names just sound like beers? I guess because they invented beer.
Probably.
Hey, you want a Bructeri? Hey, let's get together for a couple of Cheruskis. You know, they just sound like frat boy names for beers.
I'll have a light chatty.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and the chatty.
Right.
And the chatty were first. Now, as we explained in detail in the last series, they were given that name because they would just not shut up.
Like Segestes.
Segestes. Yeah, no, they would just talking all the time.
How's your wife? How's it going? No, yeah. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, long talkers. God, I hate long talkers. I've got a couple. I got a couple of friends here in Brisbane that are like this. And they're good guys. Yeah. I like them. They're nice. They're smart.
Yeah.
But, like, literally, they will come over for a chat, and I know it's a four-hour exercise. And then eventually I'll be like, all right, well, I've got things to do. And they go, yeah. Hey, did you see that the and I'll be, you know, one of them in particular, like I've literally at different times when we've been out of places, right. I've jumped in my car. Chrissy and Fox are in the car. I'm reversing the car down the driveway, and he's just walking down beside me, still talking.
Let me get some more in. Yeah.
And a guy over here the other day, another one, different guy, literally I'm trying to push him out the door, and he's standing at the gate, the back gate, going, hey, did you see that? He's starting entirely new fucking topics of conversation.
No.
As I'm pushing him out the front gate. Like,
oh my God.
These people that have no self-awareness, no sense of fucking...
other people's time.
Anyway. Well, just of their own and fucking annoying. So the Chatty were a tribe just made up of long talkers. All the rest of the German tribes kicked out the long talkers.
You got to go.
And put them all in a single tribe. Yeah. And said... It's literally how the Jews started. Did you know that?
No. That makes sense, though.
Not that the Jews, according to current thinking, as far as I'm aware, I'm not even fucking kidding. The Jews were a sub-tribe of the Canaanites that were probably just like the people the Canaanites didn't like.
Oh, my God. You got to go.
They sort of kicked them all out.
Yeah.
Of the Canaanite official tribes, and they were like gypsies, basically. The people that had been shunned from society
Wow.
ended up as the Jews, the Hebrews, and they invented their own mythology about why nobody liked them. And they're still going on with that today, oh like 3,000 years later.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that was the Chatty.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm going to get some hate mail over that. I'm not saying that there's anything inherently wrong with the Jews. Right. Let me just
or long talkers. No, Barry. Or long talkers.
No, but that's literally the current. According to fucking whatever his name was, who wrote 3,000 years of the Jews or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the theory. They were a tribe of people that were kicked out of the Canaanites, and they were the outcasts.
Yeah.
That's the word I'm looking for. They were outcasts who formed their own tribe and created a mythology around why nobody liked them.
Right. Yeah. So before we go on, I think it's worth pointing out that as far as I could tell from what little research I've done, the Germans weren't at this point causing any major trouble. They were, from what I could tell, taking it, except for Arminius, who's still looking for a way to be the big dog. They were taking advantage of Augustus's death. They were taking advantage of Tiberius's mourning. They were then taking advantage of the rebellions. So the Germans who could have taken advantage of this more proactively, did not. They're just sitting back, kicking their having their feasts or whatever. And we have to keep in mind that because, and I don't know if we finished this on the last show. I honestly can't remember. Germanicus is going to come down hard on those two last troops that are given him two last. Legions that are giving him a hard time, but he does manage to get them to punish themselves. So it's all taken care of and he doesn't have to do it. And after it's all done, he comes in. He's like, oh no, all these deaths are so horrible. We have to honor their memory and their death or whatever. But he decides that he's going to send these two still troublesome legions into the Germans. So this is not a sit back and beautifully thought out, deep thinking plan about a brand new campaign against the Germans and maybe to punish Arminius or whatever. This is just an excuse to get these guys out there, blow off some steam, maybe bring them back into the fold, get some of them killed. Let's be honest. And so it's just literally him getting them to vent off steam. This is not a major campaign. This is just something that this guy's thinking up to try to deal with the rebels who are still alive. He's got to do something with them. And this is what he comes up with.
Hey, did you see on Kelly Tudor's History Podcast's Facebook group, they had somebody asked the question, what's the funniest history podcast? And we didn't even get a mention until I kicked up a fuss and...
Wow. I take that
I was
personally.
Like...
What other...
I was like, fucking seriously? Yeah. Like, it's not even, yeah. You know, come on. Seriously? This isn't even a question. Yeah. And Kelly got stuck into me. And people were like, oh, his ego. Well, it's not my ego, motherfuckers. It's just, come on. Just it's like
straight up fat
arguing about whether or not the sky is blue. And I know the sky's not really blue. It's wavelength of light. Fucking blah, 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 blah. But fuck it.
That's what bounces
fuck all that bullshit.
Yeah.
We are. Come on. Jesus, please, come motherfuckers. On. Who are you kidding? Come anyway.
On. Yeah. Anyway.
Like, we don't ask for much in this world. Like, we're not trying to say we're the best podcast or the best history podcast even. Like, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. We don't care. We don't need all of those accolades. Yeah. But come on. Just give us the funniest history podcast. I mean,
give us something. Just the tip.
There's got to be a sub-niche somewhere that we're good at.
It's true, we don't write books. We read them. We don't write them. But give us something, please.
Actually,
you've written books. Okay. Too, okay. All right. So one of us is... Yeah. Never mind. Moving on.
So Germanicus, I think he's got a number of reasons why he's doing this. You're right. Bit of mutinies in the troops he needs to sort out, get a few of them killed, throw them into action. There's a bit of revenge for Varus, bit of glory for him. Getting the troops on his side just in case he does want to have a crack at Tiberius. Probably, you know, Tiberius is quite old, as we know. He's in his 50s, which is, you know, getting on for that era. Yes, Augustus lived until his 70s. But
he was banging young maidens. That keeps you young.
Yeah, and Agrippa didn't. Agrippa died in his 50s, I think it was. And Drusus obviously died much younger.
Right.
Germanicus is probably thinking, Tiberius is going to, even if he's loyal to Tiberius, and as far as we know he is, we talked about in previous episodes how he swore his oaths of loyalty immediately to Tiberius after he learned Augustus was dead. And by the way, that's another point. Augustus is the guy that sent Germanicus up to handle the North of the Rhine stuff. So he's doing what Augustus wanted him to do. Avenge Varus, etc. Keep the Germans at bay. But he's probably thinking, well, you know, when Tiberius goes, I'm probably next in line, and got to make sure that the troops, you know, got the cred, man. Yeah. You know, I've been out.
That's right.
Been out. I've been done my bit.
Done my
I've
stuff.
Been in the sticks in the boonies with the troops.
Got the merit badge.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So he goes after the chatty first, because they wouldn't fucking shut up. Now, it seems... only to me, like yesterday, that we were talking about his dad, Drusus, attacking the chatty. That was a year ago for us.
Right.
We talked about that 26 years ago for Rome.
It's like having a TARDIS. Sorry.
Yeah. It looks bigger on the inside for them. 1 year for us is 26 years for Rome. Now, can I just say that when you look at, you know, the criticism we get for how long it takes us to get through the Cold War.
Yeah.
And the Renaissance episodes, we did pretty good jumping, you know, getting 26
we're
years
zipping.
In this time
baby.
Of the year. We're fucking flying through this bitch.
So
anyway, Germanicus personally leads 8 legions and 15,000 auxiliaries across the Rhine. So he's got 45 to 50,000 troops, and then they get over the river and they split into two forces, Germs taking the upper Rhine and Chichinga, that's how I'm calling his second in command, Chichinga.
Kakina,
I'm just calling Severus him Chichinga. Chichinga is taking the lower forces.
Now, this is important to remember. It is the spring of 15 CE. We haven't gotten to the summer campaigns yet. This is literally the winter is over, or at least most of the winter is over. They're going to go out because, again, he's got to get some steam out of these guys. And so they've got these legions. They cross over. They and Kakina has got 5,000 auxiliaries of his own. He's got a group of Germans. He's got some other auxiliaries. And now, I just think it's smart that Germanicus has more than twice the men that Kakina has. So he's got the main force. But like you said, they're going to split up. They're going to cross over. They get into German territory. Germanicus wisely builds a fort that Tiberius had once established. But again, end, but Germanicus is on, he's moving, he's fast, because you don't want to give these Germans chance to figure out that you're in their area. So he builds a fort, but he keeps moving. He's moving at full speed, and he's coming right at the Chatty, and he's lucky that he's had a long period of dry weather, which normally doesn't happen in this part of the world, but he is moving really fast, trying to get to them before they have any idea of what's going on, where they can muster their defenses, or, and this is the important part, call for any allies. But it's the spring of 15, and he's trying to do as much as he can as the campaigning season has just started.
And he leaves a guy behind to fix up the roads and the bridges in case it rains before he can get back, which is a smart move. Yeah. Now, the Chatty were taken totally by surprise, a bit like Heather on her wedding night, and the Romans were able to do what they loved best, killing lots of old men, women, and children. Because the young men of the Chatty, when they saw the Romans coming, they fled across the Eder River and just left their old men, women, and children to be slaughtered by the Romans.
Well, in their defense, they probably did pick up the family pig, and then they swim across the river. But like you said, these people are wiped out. And just to give you an idea, the Eder is about 75 miles or 120 kilometers east of Cologne, where they started out, modern-day Cologne. So they're moving pretty deep into German territory. They surprise these people. But like you said, the warriors do get across the river, and they stand there on the banks to make sure the Romans can't cross would start pursuing them again, because if they did, it would be the beginning of the end. So the Chatty warriors stand there and make sure the Germans can't cross, but the Romans have an answer for this.
Yeah, the Chatty taunted the Romans for a while. You can't across the river, you can't get us. The Romans shot arrows at them, and the Chatty were like, oh, wow, fuck, that escalated quickly. And the Romans were like, we killed your families. And the Chatty were like, all right, we missed that. We were talking. We didn't notice that.
But you didn't get my pig.
So the chatty tried to cut a peace deal with Germs. And he said, sure, I love peace. And then Vestadioed their entire homeland.
Maybe when he says peace, it means something different in Latin than it does in German. He burns down their chief settlement, but because he did completely break their will to resist, some of them are going to agree to join him. The rest are going to flee into the wilderness. They are now tribeless. They are now homeless. They are probably pigless. They certainly don't have their families anymore. And so he has broken one of the three tribes that he has set out to do. So you can say what you want about Germanicus and as far as what Tiberius thinks about him, but so far he's playing a very solid conservative game. He's doing a good job, and he is starting out really well, hitting them fast, hitting them ruthlessly, and not letting them support each other.
Now, you said that some of the Chatty joined him. Mm-hmm. Now, would you how would you go joining forces with the guy who just murdered your entire family and burned down your house?
I wouldn't do it.
Would you be like, oh, well, say la vie. Yeah. You know, easy come, easy go. Que sera, sera.
Whatever the German version of that is, yeah. No, but I guess it's better than either death or being homeless and familyness. Because the one thing that we have figured out over the years of doing this is that for the Germans, it was all about tribes. And if you don't have a tribe, you're probably going to be picked off by somebody, probably a tribe. So I don't know any of the details, but I did read that some of them joined him. I don't know if they're going to be like slaves or whatever, but the point is some of them do come with him. And this is going to be important later on, because Arminius is going to use that in some of his propaganda that comes later. But this tribe, for all intents and purposes, has been crushed by Germanicus's forces.
Oh, man, I don't know if I could join. I mean, I'd probably go and find another German tribe too. Yeah.
Hey, can I join you guys? We got wiped out.
Give my services to
I brought a pig as an offering. Most of the pig. I got hungry.
I thought he took the pig for sex. Well, I didn't know he took it to eat. I assumed it was a sex thing.
Animal.
Which bit did he eat, and which bit did he keep for sex?
It depends on what you're into. If you're like, you know, backdoor action, then you start at the front eating and work your way back. It's pretty straightforward.
What's the option with the pig apart from backdoor action? Like,
if you take its sharp
the
teeth,
mouth?
I guess.
I'm not sure.
You got to be really trusting.
If you pull it, if you pull its teeth out,
you've got to have a special saying? Relationship with that pig. Let me tell you right now. Easy, boy.
You get down and look at it. Get down and look it in the eyes first.
Say, look, I'm about to do something, and I need you to be totally, totally hold on.
I need you to be totally cool about this, right?
Come on, pig, join me. I need you to be relaxed.
I want to know who looks at a pig and has already got over the hump of, oh, I'm going to have sex with this pig. Let's just be honest. It's going to happen. And then has to go, well, am I going to go in the mouth or the ass? I don't know. Maybe.
Is it Tuesday or Wednesday night? I don't.
Well, maybe after you've taken the ass of the pig enough times, it gets boring.
Yeah.
And you're like, I need to spice it up.
Yeah.
Let's spice it up.
Variety.
Put some scented candles on, put a bit of Barry White on, and let's try the front hole.
Oh.
Yeah, it's got teeth, but it's got a tongue. So there's that. And you don't have to get the tail out of the way. So
rape. Okay. So it's all about priorities.
Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely not the funniest podcast. It's like, I'm sure all history podcasts talk about which hole to fuck in a pig. I mean, come on. That's standard for history podcasting these days.
Yeah, and the bullet points.
There was a point in time when that was cutting edge, but now everyone does pig rape. Everyone does pig rape jokes.
Is it rape? Because I know it's not consensual. Well, that's probably another conversation for later. The pig doesn't realize what's going on, so... As long as you're not going to try to be a Supreme Court justice one day, I think you can get away with it.
You get down and you say, oink once for yes, oink twice for no.
And it better be one oink, because I'm kind of horny. Daddy's horny, Piggy. Daddy's horny. It's only hour one.
Yeah, but it's year four. Oh, so.
I think I pulled something.
Anyway, some joined him nonetheless. Others ran to the hills. Yeah. Germs returned across the Rhine. Meanwhile, Chichinga is patrolling the land between the Ruhr and the Lippe, basically to stop the Cheruskis from coming to the aid of the Chatty.
Right.
He'd also defeated the Marsi.
Wow.
In the period. He had some downtime.
Yeah.
Now, the Marsi were, this is a bit mean, they were massacred during a festival near a temple. They were having like their own little religious temple, religious ceremony, and Chichinga managed to sneak in and kill them all during a religious festival.
Oh,
the festival...
Tacky.
The temple and the festival was celebrating the German goddess Tamfana.
Right.
So, do you know much about Tamfana?
If I remember from my Colin McCullough.
You've got a half-German wife.
I do. The best half.
Does she celebrate Tamfana?
Oh, yeah, she burns things to it. The Germans were in love with trees. Tem is that temple... I'm guessing some kind of tree goddess. I really don't know. I'm going...
Fana is Latin for temples.
Oh, I've got it backwards. Okay. All right.
And so when you say, show me your fanny, you're saying, show me your temple.
Yeah, I am.
It's been suggested that it was a temple to the god Tan.
Right.
Shortened from the German word for pine tree, Tanna. But we're not really sure. In Tacitus, in his annals, he's talking about this the killing of the Marsi. He says they were helped by a knight of bright starlight, reached the villages of the Marsi, and threw their pickets round the enemy, who even then were stretched on beds or at their tables without the least fear or any sentries before their camp. So complete was their careless and disorder.
Ooh.
And of war indeed there was no apprehension. Peace. It certainly was not, merely the languid and heedless ease of half-intoxicated people.
Wow.
So there you go.
Okay, let me ask you. Let me ask a question real quick, because I just did the first of the Pearl Harbor series. Can you have any rules in war? The Romans come along. These guys are in their temple. They're praying. They're doing, even though the god is bullshit, they're observing a higher power. And I guess they're trying to, maybe I want a good harvest or make sure my kids are all alive or live into adulthood or whatever. And to slaughter someone in their temple, for the Romans, that's a very good thing because they're in a very exposed position. I get that. But just the overall, I've just been struggling with the concept of having some kind of rules when there's war going on. And war is pretty much when all the rules have broken down. So not that I'm trying to judge the Romans here, but from what we're going to see, there's going to be a lot of other slaughtering of old men, women, and children. And I just been wondering, this is 2,000 years ago. Is that just the way it was?
Yeah. It's the way it was, man. Okay. Why it still is.
That's true.
You know,
all that matters is victory.
White people out in temples and churches all around the world.
That's true.
You know, ISIS go and blow up their fellow Muslims in churches and temples, as well as Christians, and World War II Christians in the form of the British and the Americans in particular bomb the fuck out of German churches, Japanese entire cities. There are churches, probably people in churches, in different things. No one gives a fuck. It's just, winning at all costs, justify it later.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Now, we have the Geneva Conventions now, after World War II,
mm-hmm.
that would look harshly upon the deliberate attacking of civilians, but it still goes on. No, like as we've been talking about in the Bullshitfelder, who's going to prosecute the International Criminal Court? And America's like, fuck the International Criminal Court. We don't recognize you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more of this. And I guess Germanicus is just doing what he's got to do because he is vastly outnumbered. If you can take an advantage of something like this as a prudent military ruler, you should.
Hmm.
Yeah.
According to Tacitus, an area of 50 Roman miles was laid to waste with fire and sword. Damn. No sex and no age found pity.
Right.
He says, neither sex nor age moved his compassion. Everything, sacred or profane, the temple too of Tamphana, as they called it, the special resort of all those tribes, was leveled to the ground. There was not a wound among our soldiers who cut down a half asleep, an unarmed, or a straggling foe.
Damn. Wouldn't you lie a little bit and say, yeah, they fought like savages, but we still want, just to put that out there, they were half asleep when I ran my sword through them. I don't know. But I guess he's trying to be accurate in portraying what really happened during Germanicus's raid.
And I don't think the Romans found any shame in that. It was easy.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, we're cutting down. And I don't think the Germans would have either. Just the way it was.
That's true.
We killed a whole bunch of innocent people who were doing nothing. Fucking you beauty.
Yeah.
But by now, Arminius had regained control of the Cherusci, and Segestes was under attack from his own people.
Yeah,
he was saying, "Well, you know, what if you don't attack me? What if we do something else? What if they're like, okay, fuck you." He sends out envoys to Germanicus begging for help.
Yeah,
and one of these envoys is led by his son Segimundus, aka Sigmund. Now, poor Sigmund had a bit of a bad rap with the Romans. Back in 9 CE, when the Cherusci uprising had happened, he'd been a priest at the altar of Augustus in the capital of the Ubii, and he had apparently torn off his priestly regalia and joined the revolt by Arminius.
Damn.
Apparently he was a big fan of Cicero. Because you remember Cicero on Monday was going, fucking Julius Caesar, you're the best, fucking love you. If anyone tried to hurt you, I would throw my body in front of them. And then when Caesar was assassinated, he was like, woohoo!
Party! Yeah, he did it. Now, here's my thing. So for phase one, for Germanicus, phase one has gone well. But like we're about to jump into, the reasons why Germanicus is going to keep going, because the spring offensive was just a warm up. He's going to go back into the summer. But the reasons why Germanicus has decided this, the relative weakness of Arminius and the strength of Segestes, has changed, as he is about to find out. And for whatever reason, he doesn't alter his plans. But as we're about to go into, I mean, the interdynamics of what's going on in Germany, as far as these people are concerned, has changed dramatically.
So, despite Sigmund's previous betrayal of his priestly function, Germs is prepared to give him a second chance. He sends back some troops with him, and they rescue Segestes.
Yay!
And he came back, and he was granted land in Gaul for his loyalty to Rome. And as you indicated before, his daughter, Thusnelda, wife of Hermann the German, was sent to Ravenna, where she gave birth to a son.
The son
of Arminius. Now, not for nothing, but in Tacitus, Tacitus says something really tragic happened to that boy, and I'll talk about it later. But then the later books of Tacitus are missing. So we don't know what happened to him. There was apparently a bit of a story around Arminius' son, but we don't know what it is.
So Petrarch and Boccaccio couldn't find those books. I can't have everything, right?
Who? I think it was Boccaccio that found Tacitus. I think it was. We talked about.
I think.
In the show, does that sound right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds. But yes, right to those books remain missing. Mm. Unfortunately, the books that we're missing. From Tacitus are to do in his history to do with the period when Jesus was supposedly walking around too.
Oh,
So a bit of a coincidence that the bits where he could have explained some of that, what was going on, are the books of Tacitus that are missing. Because, you know, maybe there was a big Jewish rebellion in that period or something. Anyway, we don't know.
They burned those books.
Anywho, yes. Anywho, Germanicus is declared imperator by the troops at this stage. Apparently with Thibaut's blessing. Now, which is pretty huge because, as we talked about before, Thibaut doesn't really trust Germs.
Right.
But he seems to be giving him honors in order to butter him up, I think, to make him feel like things are good. It's okay. Right. Yeah, I'm happy for you to take, you know, honors and credits. So, happy ending, but no. Arminius is pretty fucking unhappy about his wife and son being raised by his mortal enemies.
Really?
Even he thinks Segestes might be happy to live in a conquered territory while his son performed the functions of a priest to a mortal man.
Ooh.
But for Arminius, the Germans were had been disgraced by having been controlled by the Romans. And his position is that Augustus and Tiberius had tried to conquer them, achieved nothing, gone back to Rome. Mm-hmm. With their tails between their legs. So there's no reason to fear Germanicus and his army of mutineers. And Tacitus records, supposedly, Arminius's great speech. Noble the father, mighty the general, brave the army, which, with such strength, has carried off one weak woman. Before me, three legions, three commanders have fallen, not by treachery, not against pregnant women, but openly against armed men do I wage war. Ooh. There are still to be seen in the groves of Germany the Roman standards which I hung up to our country's gods. Let Segestes dwell on the conquered bank. Let him restore to his son his priestly office. One thing there is which Germans will never thoroughly excuse. They're having seen between the Elbe and the Rhine the Roman rods, axes, and toga. Other nations in their ignorance of Roman rule have no experience of punishments, know nothing of tributes, and as we have shaken them off, as the great Augustus ranked among deities, and his chosen heir Tiberius departed from us, baffled, let us not quail before an inexperienced stripling, before a mutinous army. If you prefer your fatherland, your ancestors, your ancient life to tyrants and to new colonies, follow as your leader Arminius to glory and to freedom rather than Segestes to ignominious servitude.
Ooh, nice.
Now, it is nice, but I'll tell you the thing that gets me with this is Tiberius is writing this down. Tiberius is a Roman. He's a Roman governor.
Did you say Tiberius or did you mean Tacitus?
Fuck it. Sorry, Tacitus is writing this down.
Right.
He's a governor. He's a I think a senator. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember Tab, but he's high, you know, one of the Roman aristocracy. He's writing this, I think, towards the end of the first century. His histories, sort of 95, 100, something like this. Maybe a little bit later. Let me see the writing of the histories. Oh, the annals, sorry. The writing of the annals, we don't know. But probably late in his life anyway. He died in 120.
Right.
So he's writing this probably early second century. He was around during the rule of Vespasian. He's writing this. I mean, this is pretty big words to put in the mouths of the German enemy.
Calling the Romans cowards.
For a Roman.
Ineffectual.
Calling Augustus and Tiberius cowards. Yeah. Now, of course, if Tacitus is writing during the reign of Vespasian, he started his career under Vespasian, would have gone on under Titus. And so they're not Julio-Claudians anyway. Right. So maybe it's okay to poke fun at Julio-Claudians at this stage or to put these... Right. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, he's basically making Arminius sound like a bold and brave warrior and standing up to the Romans, calling the Romans tyrants, you know? If you prefer your fatherland, your ancestors, your ancestors, to tyrants and to new colonies. That's it's pretty racy stuff.
Yeah. But again, since all these people are dead, you know, this is like 80 years later or whatever, I guess it's relatively okay. And because Tacitus wrote it down word for word, this incredible speech works. Not only do the Cherusci join Arminius, but neighboring tribes join him. And he gets the support of his uncle Ingiomirus. I'm not going to say his name. Ingiomirus. I have no idea. It sounds Spanish.
Just call him Inglorious Bastard. That's what okay,
his uncle Inglorious Bastard, who was a respected friend of Rome. So that's a great propaganda tool, a coup for Arminius. So again, so he gives this rousing speech. He talks about his son. He talks about his wife who's been taken away. He talks about his father-in-law who's being a wimp, and you're all going to be slaves if you don't do something about it. And the Germans respond to this. So now this should have never happened in some ways, but Germanicus was going to punish these two legions by sending them up against the Germans. He has created a shitstorm, and now the Germans are about to reply in kind. The war is all back on just because of the rebellions that went on last year. So again, these two are going to go at each other again.
So Arminius is pulling together this coalition of tribes. Germanicus hears about it, and he immediately sets off to try and stop them from joining up. And he does a pincer movement against the Bructeri. Now, Chichinga was sent with his four legions to go to hit the southern borders of the Bructeri. Meanwhile, the man with the very unfortunate name, Albino Venus Pedo, I looked it up. It's Latin for untrustworthy white child lover. albino, white, varnus, untrustworthy, pedo, child lover. So untrustworthy white child lover, or just priest, they call him, Catholic priest. Untrustworthy white child lover.
Yeah.
Hey, priest.
Yeah.
He sets out with his cavalry to to the land of the Frisii. Mm-hmm. And Germs takes his four legions on boats.
Built by Daddy.
Boats, Ray. He's in the middle of fucking Germany. What's he doing with boats in the middle of Germany?
What's the waterway up there to the mouth of the Ems? Looking at a map. I wish I was looking at a map. But I guess there's pretty massive rivers and waterways up there that he is going to take his four legions on ships. And I don't know if he's just trying to be able to come at the Germans in three different directions, because these three groups are going to then reconnect. And then that's when the fighting is going to start in earnest. But he's splitting everybody up so the Germans have no idea what's going on. And that's the route he decided to take, because it was easier by ship and he had four legions. And I guess he just wanted to do some summer sailing and get a tan. That's my guess.
Well, the way I understand it is he sailed his four legions on ships up the North Sea to the mouth of the Ems River.
Right.
And then brought them down from the north. So he's got Chichinga and Catholic priest coming up from the south.
Right.
This is the pincer movement, right? And he's coming down from the north. Must have taken his guys to the coast, jumped on some ships, sailed around the north of Germany on these boats, and then got off and comes at them from the north.
Yeah.
Now, the Bructeri, one of the German tribes, attempted a scorched earth policy, but they get scattered by Statinius, ancestor of Big Steady, from our Cold War show, the Secretary of State.
I knew it.
Under
knew
FDR it. And yes. Harry Truman. Yeah. Now, Statinius, while he's doing this, has the good fortune to discover amongst the booty that they capture from the Bructeri one of the three standards lost by Varus, the standard of the 21st Legion.
Right. Damn.
Now, this is going to be very important for the post PR spin that Tiberius puts on this whole thing. Because he's going to say, we'll get into this in the next episode, but he's going to say, no, it's not true that we didn't achieve anything. We got the standards back. That's really all we wanted to do. That was the plan. Like I sat down with Germs, bullshit, at the beginning of this and said, listen, all I need you to do, nephew of mine, is get back the lost standards. The fact that we didn't win any territory and we lost thousands of men in the process cost a lot of money is immaterial.
It was worth that hunk of metal. We got an eagle back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Just to wrap up, I was going to say that the Bructeri seem to slip away, but at one point, Germanicus finds himself close to the Teutoburg Forest. And he decides to go and have a look for himself at the results of the carnage from 5 years or 6 years previous. So he moves carefully. Eventually, they come upon Varus's old camp.
Ooh.
There's bones and broken weapons everywhere. And here's how Tacitus puts it. In the center of the field were the whitening bones of men as they had fled or stood their ground, strewn everywhere or piled in heaps. Nearby lay fragments of weapons and limbs of horses and also human heads prominently nailed to trunks of trees. In the adjacent groves were the barbarous altars on which they had immolated tribunes and first rank centurions.
The killing fields.
Now, Germanicus had some guys in his troops that had survived the destruction of Varus's troops. They were able to point out to Germanicus, where various commanders had fallen, where the eagles had been lost, where Varus had stabbed himself and committed suicide.
Yeah.
Germanicus held ceremonies for the dead, but there was no way, obviously, of telling which bones were German bones and which bones were bones were Roman bones.
Do the best you can.
So I guess, I guess they just buried them all. Germanicus laid the first sod of dirt on the burial mound. Now, when reports reached Tiberius about this, he didn't approve.
No. I was thinking about
why didn't he approve?
I was thinking about that because he said technically Germanicus, who is an augur, should not, but only on religious grounds, come into contact with the remains of the dead, like young Caesar when he was a Flamen Dialis. And I'm sitting there thinking, but wait, he's a military leader. How in the fuck is he not going to come into contact with dead bodies? If he does his job right, there should be a lot of dead bodies. So I think it was just Tiberius just trying to nitpick, just trying to find some way to deflect a little bit of Germanicus's success, because again, this guy's paranoid, and this young kid is getting more and more beloved. He's doing these amazing things. He's on the track for having a triumph if everything goes his way. So I think Tiberius is just nitpicking because that's all he can do.
Well, Tacitus has another theory. It's that maybe Tiberius thought it would damage the morale of the troops to be reminded about what happened to Varus and his legions.
Right.
Tacitus writes, "And so the Roman army, now on the spot 6 years after the disaster, in grief and anger began to bury the bones of the three legions, not a soldier knowing whether he was interring the relics of a relative or a stranger, but looking on all as kinsfolk and of their own blood, while their wrath rose higher than ever against the foe. In raising the barrow, Caesar laid the first sod, rendering thus a most welcome honour to the dead, and sharing also in the sorrow of those present. This Tiberius did not approve, either interpreting unfavourably every act of Germanicus, or because he thought that the spectacle of the slain and unburied made the army slow to fight and more afraid of the enemy, and that a general invested with the augurate and its very ancient ceremonies ought not to have polluted himself with funeral rites." So it's not, you know, dead in battle that the augur's not allowed to be around. It's the funeral rites the dead, apparently. Anyway, but as we'll see in the next episode, the opposite happened. Instead of being lowering morale, whether or not Germanicus knew this or it was deliberate or an accident, they were furious and wanted revenge against Arminius and the Cherusci. But that, my friends, will be something we'll talk about in the next episode.
Send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, mother.